Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 262. My name is John. Joining me tonight is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Hello. May the 8th be something.
I actually had a whole thing planned out in my head that I forgot to remind myself of or write down about Revenge of the 8th, you know, or something. Some kind of marketing plan we could use for this episode, since, like all good Star Wars podcasts, we're putting out a new episode 3 or 4 days after Star Wars Day, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's fine. Happy holiday, anyway.
That's true. We are well before the anniversary of the actual release of Star Wars or The Phantom Menace or anything like that. So, in that regard, we're early. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Those are the real holidays.
Sure. Come out. Every day is Star Wars Day, you know, for us. So, and actually, it's totally my fault, I should admit, at the start of the show here, that we did not get anything recorded before Star Wars Day or this weekend. I've been up to no good, just too busy. Mm-hmm. And so Ryan was ready to go, and I was constantly delaying and causing issues. So, yep. So I thank you, Ryan, for being flexible and being here tonight on a weeknight as we record this episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.
All good. Ready All good? To talk some Star Wars.
Okay. All right, cool. Let's do it. So we want to start the episode out by talking about The Phantom Menace and going to see The Phantom Menace this weekend. Do you want to start, Ryan, or should I?
You know what? You go ahead.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I will talk about going to see Star Wars The Phantom Menace this weekend. I went on Friday night, May 3rd, right? So it was fantastic. It was such a fun experience. I was excited about it for a long time, but I didn't end up getting tickets to go until either Wednesday night or sometime on Thursday. I ended up finally pulling the trigger and going to get the tickets. But though listeners of the show who've been listening for a long time or listened to most episodes will remember our friends Caleb and Dan, who both went to see The Phantom Menace with me in Elgin, which is, I don't know, 45 minutes or so from where we live, where I live, but it has a really cool theater there in Elgin. It's by the Marcus Cinema chain. So anybody in the Midwest, maybe, you know, you may be familiar with that theater chain. I really like that theater chain. And they got a great theater. So we drove up to Elgin and, it was great. You know, I brought my kids, Dan brought his kids, Caleb was there. And, we had a really great experience as far as the theater and that kind of thing is concerned. And obviously it was a thrill to see the movie on the big screen again. In fact, I know there's no movie I've seen in a movie theater more times than The Phantom Menace. So it is synonymous with the theatrical experience for me. So, it was great. It was really, really fun. And then on the way out of the theater, I actually saw, Gabe from Blast Points, which was, a fun surprise and not expected at all, but, saw him and ambushed him for a few minutes and talked his ear off, and he was very gracious and nice, so that was cool. That was really fun. So yeah, overall, just a killer experience going to see The Phantom Menace on Friday, May 3rd. Ryan, you went to the Alamo Draft House, I think, right?
I did, yeah. Went to Alamo here in Denver. I too was, you know, excited. I missed the 3D re-release of it in the theater. What was that, a decade ago, maybe?
Maybe
15 years?
Not quite that long, because Dan and I brought Owen and Dexter, our two oldest children, to see that one in the theater. Okay. But they were little. We have pictures of them, and they're, one of them's in a Yoda costume and the other one's in an Ewok costume, and these are costumes they wore as toddlers, so it must have been, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago at least. Yeah.
Okay.
So you went to the Alamo, Ryan, to see The Phantom Menace?
Yes, I went to Alamo Drafthouse here in Denver. I had gotten tickets the moment they went on sale. I went on May 4th, an 11 a.m. showing, which was cool. Yeah, it's the... I didn't go to the 3D re-release when that hit theaters. So this was actually the first time I saw Phantom Menace in the theater since 1999. And it was an interesting experience. First of all, the Alamo experience was amazing, as always. There was a great pre-show with, you know, half hour of just, like, Phantom Menace-related stuff. Highlight being showing the, like, the KFC and Taco Bell commercials from the era.
Like, yes.
Tons of those. Nice. Which got me pretty psyched for some Phantom Menace. And yeah, like, I haven't seen the movie in theaters for 25 years. You know, it's a movie that is very special and important to me. It's one that I've watched, you know, on VHS, then on DVD, then on Blu-ray, then on 4K Blu-ray, like, a lot, over the years. And, you know, it's something I can always, like, put on in the background, whatever. And then seeing it in the theater and being kind of trapped in a dark room with the Phantom Menace for a little, like, what is it, like over 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's a pretty lengthy movie. It kind of changed my perception on the film in both positive and negative ways. I think, like, because when you're, you know, anytime I'm watching The Phantom Menace now, I'm, like, on my couch and, you know, I've seen it so many times. I know, like, every line of dialogue. I'm, you know, I'll be checking my phone or doing work on my computer or something when it's on. Like, I'm never, like, really zoned into watching The Phantom Menace when I have it on. So I think, like, that deludes what this movie is, in a way, because this movie is a lot. It's peaks and valleys, I would say. And so I think some of the stuff that when you're just, like, sitting there watching it, especially when you're sitting there watching it with someone who's not a huge fan of the movie, which is my wife. She likes Star Wars. She does not, has never really liked, this movie and Attack of the Clones in particular. And which, fair. So, like, I could kind of, like, see her, like, cringing at points, and I'm like, okay, well, this is just something that, you know, I've just accepted, and I don't really think critically about this movie at this point, because it's just like, hey, this is this thing that I loved when I was a teenager, and had a lot of fun in the build-up to it. Like, I have, like, so many great movies around, or memories around this movie, that I hadn't really thought about it critically in a while, but, like, when you're really stuck in there watching it, I think, first thing, 90% of the humor in this movie kind of bombs. Like, it was wild being in the theater, and there's jokes, there's physical comedy, and then there's, like, that pause to, like, get an audience reaction. Theater was dead silent during, like, some of, like, the goofy Jar Jar bits, some of, like, the one-liners, some of like the physical comedy, and I was like, wow, this is like, it was kind of like watching like a stand-up comedian just bomb on stage. I was like, oh my god, this is like borderline uncomfortable, because like even I would just like on instinct kind of like chuckle at like a Jar Jar thing, and I'm like, wait, I don't actually think that's funny. I don't know why I'm like chuckling at this, and like no one else in this packed theater is responding at all. And I think that was just an interesting part of the theater dynamic there.
Yeah, I'm almost kind of surprised to hear you say that, although when I think about it, I'm not, because like my theater wasn't really laughing out loud or anything, but I was. And that was like one of my takeaways from going to the movie. I was saying to my friends afterwards and stuff, I was like laughing out loud at things. Some of them were intentionally funny, and then some of the things I was laughing out loud at were like not intentionally funny. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest pop for me, like I was cracking up, like the funniest thing to me was there's a moment where they bring little Anakin before the Jedi Council, and they say, yeah, no, he can't be a Jedi. And Qui-Gon's like, no, you gotta test him at least, you know? And Qui-Gon looks at Mace Windu, and Mace Windu just goes like, you know, like he rolls his eyes and he's like, oh, fine, what? And he does this thing with his hand where he's like, bring him in, I guess. What?
Yeah.
And like, I was dying. I was cracking up. Yeah, but it's not supposed to elicit a laugh.
It's not laugh out loud funny. It's not set up to be. But it's like, it's a great character moment for both of them. And I think it's really endearing and I like that. But
it's also ridiculous and it made me laugh a lot. I like it though. I like it. But like, I was also laughing tons at a lot of like, I mean, yeah, specifically Jar Jar lines. I don't know. I just remember laughing a lot during the movie and thinking, like, this is really fun, you know? So, but in, you know, like, I guess in support of the point you're making, I didn't, like, hear a lot of people around me laughing at that stuff. So it might just be me being,
you know,
just geared up and excited to watch that movie and just want, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
in the right state of mind to laugh at things. But yeah, I would say the evidence in the theater supports what you're saying, that not a lot of people were laughing at the jokes.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I mean, like, you know, like, we've been quoting this movie and, like, you know, appreciating the ridiculousness of it for so long, that, like, I kind of was just, like, I don't know. It was, like, it's a movie that's like really, it's funny in my head, and then like I'm actually like, huh, no one's laughing, and I'm like, wait, maybe this isn't actually, maybe excuse me isn't like actually funny, like, but it is, but it's funny, but it, maybe not, I don't know, it's very weird.
Yeah, I think it's more just fun than funny, you know, mm-hmm. like, although I was laughing at Jar Jar stuff, but there's lots of Jar Jar things that I probably wouldn't laugh at, but like I would smile at, or, you know, I don't know, that I think are just kind of fun or, you know, goofy, but maybe not super laugh out loud funny.
So, yeah,
I don't know.
It's interesting because like I had that experience, and then over the course of this week, I've been rewatching a lot of James Bond films and the Pierce Brosnan ones in particular. I watched GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, and World Is Not Enough over the course of the past 3 days or 4 days, and like I kept like thinking back to my experience watching Phantom Menace, especially with World Is Not Enough, because it has these moments that like set up these jokes. And then there's like this like pause for like an audience reaction. And that movie has like a pretty bad script, even compared to like the two previous Brosnan Bonds. And it also has the experience of Denise Richards in it, who is like a very stiff delivery, like awkward, not well directed character in that movie, and it like really like made me think of like of Phantom Menace in that way. And it's funny too, because it's like, I think the same year as Phantom Menace.
I think it's a 1999 era. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, if I was watching this movie with a bunch of like James Bond fans in a theater right now, would people be laughing at some of these one-liners and some of this like physical humor and stuff? And I don't know. It just kind of like reframed, and got me really thinking about, you know, just like comedy in blockbuster films and stuff, and how it like can age very poorly in just like things just stop being funny after enough time passes. I think it'll be really interesting in like 20 years from now to like reappraise some of like the MCU movies, especially, you know, stuff like, you know, the ones that are just like nonstop like banter and jokes, like how those will actually feel to like watch in 20 years. I don't know, just something I've been thinking about. The other thing with Phantom Menace, which I think is like much more egregious than the humor, is kind of the I think the most charitable way to put it is just like tone deafness around how like ethnic languages are in the film. I think, you know, with the Gungans and the Nemoidians, like just the accents, and you know, I think they're extremely exaggerated and stereotypical. And this wasn't like a shocking revelation to me or anything, because like I know what all their dialogue is. I know everything Captain Tarpel says, and Newt Gunray and all of this stuff. I know that dialogue. I know how it sounds, everything. But then you're like in the theater, and it's like, this is of its era, which,
yeah,
even for its era, not great kind of thing. There's no part of me that believes it's malicious or like George Lucas is racist, yeah, or anything like that. Like, cause we know he's not. Like, I know enough about the dude to know he's not. I also know that from this movie on, for the rest of the prequels, like a lot of that stuff is toned down, and there's like very few things that, you know, feel super like problematic to me, at least in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So I think like there should have been feedback in the moment when the movie was being made, and someone being like, maybe we can rework some of the, like the delivery of, you know, this like broken English and stuff that sounds not great. But you know, George didn't really have an editor. You know, if for a lot of that stuff, and you know, it is what it is. And I don't think it's malicious, but it is still like, wow, this is like kind of uncomfortable at times. Like I could not imagine like a Star Wars thing coming out now that is like that. Like, so I don't know. I think that was a bit of a bummer, and just kind of like an uncomfortable thing that is like really amplified by being like in the theater setting. The last thing, my last like kind of dig is the multi-part, you know, ending battle, which, you know, Star Wars staple. Obviously, none of this was a surprise to me. I knew it was all coming. But, like the lightsaber fight is so good, and like it's so good, it's so emotionally charged. The choreography is still like you could put that scene out now in any blockbuster and people would be like, whoa, that was sweet. Like, that was a highlight of this film. Like, it is that good. It is timeless. And there's just so much emotion behind it. It's great. And I think just the tonal whiplash of going from that to the battle on Naboo, which is, like, kind of intense, but also kind of silly. And then there's the Anakin in the spaceship, which is just, like, pure silly. It's, I don't know, like, I really felt the whiplash, like, this time around. And, yeah, I think it kind of, like, it's kind of a bummer that it just kind of plays out how it does, because I think, like, the lightsaber fight is so strong and so emotional. So,
yeah, that's true. Although I think cutting away from it, you know, kind of builds some tension and anticipation where I don't know if it would be, not that it wouldn't work, it would work fine, I'm sure, but I don't think I like the idea of just watching that entire Duel of the Fates sequence play out without being interrupted. You know, I don't know, maybe just because I am so used to the Star Wars like format or whatever, but mm-hmm. you know, I can't think of really any kind of confrontation in a Star Wars film that doesn't do that. And just imagining that Duel of the Fates sequence, I mean, I could cut to something else maybe that you'd like more or something, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. But yeah, that just watching it play out straight through, I think maybe would reduce some of the excitement, anticipation, tension, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, possibly, but I think of something like the throne room scene in Last Jedi. And, you know, that's like, it's probably a shorter scene screen time wise. But I feel like if that was cutting away to like three different parts, three different, like two other stories, and like.
Are you talking about Kylo and Rey?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It cuts to Poe on the ship with Leia. And I think it might cut to something else too, but it definitely cuts.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if it was like going to, I think the point was more like, yes, you're right. But like, if it was going to something that was like really goofy and like, you know, like this is for the 6-year olds in the house. Yeah. Like,
I think it
would lose some of its impact, but those were like emotional.
Yeah. They were also more character
driven. Right. Scenes. So.
Right.
Yeah. So those are like kind of my like main, like, okay, I'm really noticing these things now, kind of things. But then there are also things that I appreciated more than I have in years seeing in the theater. The environments and locations in The Phantom Menace are so good. Like, there's just, thinking of like Theed and Naboo in particular, and the just like the weird noir vibes of Coruscant. It's, the locations are incredible.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny, I was arguing with my older son on the way home from the movie because God, what did he give it? He gave it a Letterboxd review and it pissed me off. I forget what he gave it, but it was way too low of a score. And I was like, this is outrageous. C.O. Bibble style. But he was saying that he likes the movie. He thinks it's fun. He enjoys the movie, but he's like, it's an awful movie. It's not good, whatever. And I was like, okay, but, you know, I disagree with you, but fine, whatever. But he was saying that the he was one of the points he was making was that all the locations look, they don't look real. They look so fake. They look so CG, whatever. And I'm like, what, Lake Como in Italy? Is that what you're talking about? I mean, like, he's like, oh, the Gungan battle, like, it just looks like a computer or whatever. I'm like, those are like background plates. That's like photography. It's not like they did not computer generate that. He's like, the sky looks so fake. I'm like, well, it's a photograph of the sky. It's like a real, you know what I mean? So I think I was trying to tell him that I think, you know, you get this idea in your head sometimes that everything is CG or everything is constructed. And I mean, it is constructed in a sense, but, you know, like we were talking about how many models are used in the production of the Phantom Menace and how many practical elements there are. And,
I can kind of see it for the fields, just because there's also like a lot of CG stuff happening in those scenes as well. So I would say, like, I feel a bit of disconnect there, yeah, too, to like those scenes in particular. But like Theed and the palace and like all the stuff shot in Italy is like the most gorgeous that Star Wars has looked, I think. Like, it's incredible.
And he doesn't think Jar Jar holds up either, which I totally do. And I understand that that's a little more like, you know, part of it is because I was trying to explain to him, or just kind of put out there that, like, you were born at a time when, you know, CG visual effects had already, you know, come so far and were so impressive. And I think, you know, obviously if Jar Jar was a fully digital character created in 2024, it would look better. I'm not saying it wouldn't, but I'm still astounded by how good it looks. Like, I don't think it's that far off from contemporary, you know, digital characters, and it's the first one. Now, if we want to talk about Boss Nass's robes, you know what I mean, or Boss Nass in general, yeah, I don't think he looks that great as far as a digital character is concerned in 2024, but to me, Jar Jar is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I would say, like, yes, there are some problems with the CG in this movie. I would say less so than in Attack of the Clones. I also will say that about 2 weeks ago or so, I sat down to watch the new Flash movie on Max. Really sat down with just like an open mind now that we're past all the stuff around that movie. I sat down. I could not make it past 15 minutes. And it's really rare for me to turn off a movie that I'm like sitting down to watch. But I was like, this is so visually offensive to me that I cannot watch it. Like, the CG to me was just so aggressively bad that I'm like, I cannot. And also, this movie is like 3 hours long. And I'm like, I'm already miserable. I'm just sitting on my couch. I did not pay for a ticket to this. I'm just going to cut my losses and watching this.
Did you get to Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne or Michael Keaton's Batman? Oh.
No.
Fair enough.
I did watch some of Batman 89 on DVD the other day, though. Is pretty sweet. So
Well, for sure, yeah. Okay, but, cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the time and for, like, just the innovation of Phantom Menace, like, it's still, like, it's really impressive, especially if you, like, you have the context of, you know, stuff coming out, you know.
Yeah.
Look at CG from, you know, movies in from 1995 to 1998 and then watch Phantom Menace, like...
And actually, I think there's a few, I've talked about this before, but there's a few shots that I do think are pretty glaring. There's one shot of some of the vehicles coming out of the swamp on Naboo that looks like Windows 95 PC video game like type stuff. And there's a shot of R2 in a Naboo cruise or a Naboo fighter in a space sequence where he just looks so shiny and just like it does not look It doesn't look good. And there's a few shots like that, but to me, like, they're glaring because the majority of the shots do look so good. Yeah.
There was one shot, like, I noticed that, like, I think it was the... I'm trying to remember which it was. Maybe it was the... I think it was the Trade Federation, like, troop transports. There was one shot where they look really smooth, like in a video game when, like, the textures don't load immediately.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, is that really what they look like? I mean, overall, like, still in pretty incredible. And the other thing, which I feel I will not accept feedback or arguments on this point, the costumes are so good in this movie. Amazing. Like Amidala's various outfits and stuff are so intricate, and like, that's something where you're seeing it on the big screen and you're just like, I was just like marveling at like the detail of the costumes, and there's so much like creative and interesting just looks. And you know, of course, like the ship design and everything is amazing. So just that stuff is incredible. And then the last thing I'll say is, which is something I've like always kind of held and this hasn't changed, is I think this movie has a very good plot that is just not always executed well. But I think the plot and the themes are still, and the ideas are still really, really strong. It's just pretty clunky at times for various reasons.
I think certainly the movie has issues, and you know, like, we've always known that, and I didn't really have the experience where I had any new takeaways about the movie from watching it, you know, on the big screen. But it was really fun to have the chance to see it that way again, because, like, to me, it's a movie that I so closely associate with going, you know, to the movie theater and that kind of thing. So that was fun on that level. And I made $15 million this weekend. So, you know, hopefully Lucasfilm will be, encouraged by that to release, you know, Star Wars movies in the theaters for a weekend here and there. A little more frequently. You know, I don't think they should do it every 2 months or anything, but, you know, at least every year, maybe put one out for a weekend or two or something like that. I know they're doing some, like, the Alamo in Austin, I believe, is doing all nine Star Wars movies, all Skywalker Saga movies over the summer. I forget exactly how they're spacing them out, but I think they're doing them all. But yeah, just, you know, to put one of these movies out again in the theater, you know, for a weekend here and there, I would love it. So it gives fans an event to get excited about. I mean, you know, just looking at people in the community, people are so excited for this weekend to be able to go see this movie. And, you know, yes, there is an Acolyte, you know, there's Acolyte footage, which we're about to talk about. That was, you know, part of it. But I honestly don't think that's, like, just listening to people and watching comments online and stuff, I don't really think that was, like, the main draw for people. It wasn't like when I went to go see, you know, Meet Joe Black because I wanted to see the Phantom Menace trailer. You know, they're going to see the Phantom Menace.
Meet Joe Black trailer.
Well, yeah. Or when I went to go see Wing Commander. Isn't that what it was called? Wing Commander? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because of the trailer. Yeah, no, I think people wanted to see The Phantom Menace in the theater again, and the Acolyte stuff was a nice little bonus, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why don't we...
It was a nice big bonus, honestly. Like...
We'll be right back. we jump into that, why don't we move on to talking about The Acolyte, which is releasing in less than a month now. On Star Wars Day, we were treated to, if you went to the theater to watch The Phantom Menace, you were treated to a special scene from The Acolyte, and we also were gifted an Acolyte trailer, final trailer, on Star Wars Day as well on May 4th. So, should we talk about the scene in the, you know, accompanying Phantom Menace first?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of hoping for something similar to Andor when there was an Andor sneak peek with Rogue One, which, you know, they included some like talking head footage or, you know, interview footage of like Tony Gilroy and Kathleen Kennedy and Diego Luna, stuff like that. So I was kind of hoping for a little bit of insight into The Acolyte like that with this. But I think the trade-off is that we got probably a little bit meatier scene or sequence than, you know, than we otherwise would have gotten or that we got with Andor. So it's a big meaty sequence, as you said, Ryan, and I think it feels like right now the marketing point, the key selling point here for The Acolyte is the martial arts film kind of influence. I feel like that is that's the thing that I'm really taking away from, you know, this scene, but then also that first trailer featured, I think, a lot of that too, and that really seems to be like what they're leading with, in my opinion, in terms of like how they're selling this show to the audience, you know?
I think it's part of it. I wouldn't say it's the main thing. I think they're selling the Jedi part of it. Like, hey, like, Jedi are back. Like,
that's
you're
true.
Going to see a bunch of Jedi on screen with, like, different colored lightsabers and stuff. And also, you're going to see a Sith on the screen, or something Sith-esque. And there's that. I think there's the mystery part of it, like the noir kind of, you know, like there's literally lines like someone is killing Jedi. It doesn't make sense. And it's like, okay, who is killing Jedi? Like that's intriguing. And I think there's that part. And then I think something I've kind of taken away from all of these trailers and interviews is the sort of like questioning and challenging institutions as well around, like, you know, it's like who's allowed to have power? And, you know, how do they get it? Why are they able to hold on to it and stuff like that? So I think like it's hitting like a lot of like, I don't know. It has like a lot of strong, you know, visual elements, themes, all kind of coming together. Like it's a lot of big swings, it feels like.
But, yeah, that's fair. And I mean, I definitely see all that stuff in the trailers, but when I was in the theater, you know, watching that clip, I was like, okay, well, they're choosing something, you know, hey, everybody come see The Phantom Menace this weekend, and we're going to show you a little sneak peek at The Acolyte. And like what they showed in the theater was very much like, this is going to be, I mean, it's different for Star Wars, you know, it is different for sure. In that it was much more, you know, I'm not really familiar. I'm going to, you know, hopefully do some homework, but did you say the wushu? Is that the name of the genre? Mm-hmm. Wushu films? Like, yeah. I haven't seen too much of that. And, but you know, I definitely feel like watching the clip, like, okay, this is drawing from different influences than, you know, previous Star Wars projects. And I'm sure there's lots of scenes with Jedi all over the place that they could have chosen to be like, when we're going to show you a scene from this show to try to get you interested, like, you know, they could have done that, and they chose this like thing that was very kinetic and featured a very different kind of action than you would get in other Star Wars projects. So maybe, yeah, but I guess like they have put out two trailers now that I have been seen by more people than the footage in the theater this weekend. And, mm-hmm. and those trailers do, you know, they obviously do, yeah, include other elements as well. Yeah. Yeah.
What it reminded me of in two ways, because it made me feel the same way I felt when we saw the first Mandalorian, like, clip.
Yeah.
Like, with Werner Herzog and that scene where it is, like you were saying, like, it's like, whoa, this is something we haven't seen in Star Wars before. This kind of, like, really just, like, tense, I don't know, like, almost, like, Inglourious Bastards, like, kind of, just really, really just, like, tense, like, negotiation, conversation scene, and that was like, I was like, whoa, this feels really fresh. Like, it doesn't feel like pandering to something that's like come before. It's like kind of challenging your expectations of like what Star Wars can be. And it's like, it feels fresh and exciting. And that's like, that's kind of how I felt watching this scene here. Because it is, like, you know, inspired by, you know, like, another genre, but, you know, set in the Star Wars universe. And I don't know, there's something, like, really exciting about it. And I think I would be feeling a little different if this was, like, the only thing we had seen or read about the Acolyte, and it's just like, hey, this is just like, you know, a bunch of like wire kung fu with lightsabers. Like, I mean, like, that would be cool, but mm-hmm. I don't think I would be as excited as I am for the show if I didn't know about like the mystery element of it, and, you know, like some of like the heavy thematic stuff that that they're going for. But so then like something like this is like kind of like, oh, it's got all that stuff, and it's gonna have, like, you know, I just got done watching like maybe the best lightsaber battle and best choreography ever in a Star Wars movie, and it's like, oh, you're gonna give me something kind of like that now too in this, like, really cool. And the other thing I'll say about like seeing this clip on the big screen is it could hang on the big screen. Like, I think there's some of like the Disney Plus Star Wars shows, like, you know, there's scenes, there's shows. I think if you put, like, you know, some Book of Boba Fett up on a theater screen, maybe it wouldn't look so great. Maybe it wouldn't feel so great. Even, I would say, maybe some parts of, like, Ahsoka, which is a show I really like, but I don't know if it would look great on a big screen.
Yeah, I think definitely some parts of Obi-Wan, too, unfortunately, probably wouldn't look great on a big screen. But, yeah. No, I hear you. I did think there were a couple shots, because they showed the teaser also afterwards, right? Like, they showed the scene from The Acolyte first, and then they showed the teaser. I did think there was a couple shots in the teaser that looked... I was like, yeah, you know, it feels a little bit like a TV show on the big screen right now. But, I would say overall, yeah, it looks really good.
I think so. Like that uninterrupted fight scene.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It was like, this could be a movie. Like, this could be like a high budget Star Wars movie that like doesn't look cheesy or corny on the big screen. Like,
yeah. No, for sure.
Maybe some of those like flashes of scenes will look better in context, but when they're all just like spliced together like that, it maybe they don't look as good, or maybe they won't, and maybe this is like just a visual high point and that's why they're showing it. But I mean, cool, like either way.
Yeah. So I mean, as far as the sequence goes, like we've talked about our kind of reaction to it, I guess like content wise it was basically Indara, Master Indara, right? Chilling in what was it, like a cantina type area or whatever, right? And then May shows up and you know, gets aggressive towards her, and then there's like this long sort of fight sequence between her and May. So, you know, as you mentioned, there's like wire work and very, very flashy choreography. And, you know, to me, again, I know I already said this, but it's like the big takeaway is that this did not feel like, something I've seen in Star Wars in terms of the choreography and action style. So that was different. It was cool. Like, I'm excited for it. I will say that it is, man, how do I put this? I don't have a lot of familiarity with the genre, so I don't want to say like it's not a genre that I'm super into, because I guess it's probably more just that it's not something that I'm, you know, super knowledgeable or familiar with. But I guess as much as I've like, we have been this episode talking about how great the Duel of the Fates lightsaber sequence is, I think I do tend towards, or just, I guess historically I've been a little more interested in like a slower paced, more dialogue driven kind of action style in terms of like, you know, hand to hand combat, or, you know, whatever you want to say, like the melee, whatever, I don't know, you know, fighting. So I'm gonna have to adjust to it a little bit, I guess is what I'm saying. I think it's going to be flashy and it's going to be stylish and it's going to be cool. But it's also just going to be definitely a new flavor in Star Wars. And I'm excited about it, you know, for that reason. But I also, I feel a little bit like an outsider isn't the right way to put it, but I definitely, it feels foreign in a way where it's like, you know, foreign to me. Like, I'm just not very familiar with this, and, you know, it's going to take some readjusting of my, you know, perspective or whatever. And I, it, you know, as you brought up earlier, I feel like there's going to be enough familiar in the show too, where I'll feel a little, you know, grounded in that regard. But, you know, it's cool because this is a creator in Leslie Headland who is bringing in some different influences, obviously kind of drawn towards some, you know, different, you know, filmmaking influences or film, you know, kind of influences than a lot of other people who've made Star Wars have been. And yeah, it's going to be exciting to see her kind of bring this into Star Wars. But, you know, it was like, I don't know. I feel like it's like a band that you like a lot, that you love, you know, who is doing really great music in a genre of music that you don't listen to. And then as a fan being like, okay, I gotta like try to, you know, like be open-minded to this and kind of like ease into and get used to, you know, because the boundaries are being pushed and this band is doing something, you know, kind of creatively unexpected. And, you know, I just think it's going to take some adjustment. But, you know, for me personally, I try, like with a band or whatever, I feel like I am pretty good about like coming around, and like I can listen to something and be like, okay, well, that's not what I thought they were going to do, and that's not what I expected, but this is different. But I'm gonna, you know, kind of like give it a fair shake and sit with it for a little bit and kind of get used to it. And, you know, I don't need to do that with this. It's not like I was like, oh wow, I didn't really like that, but I'm going to work hard to like it. That's not what I'm saying. It was cool as hell and I thought it was really fun, but, you know, like Quentin Tarantino, let's say, right? I know that Quentin Tarantino is not like a primary influence on this, or it's maybe not what she's really pulling from. Although, you know, I don't know, Kill Bill and stuff like that, maybe I think is kind of an influence, but, you know, like I'm not really drawn to the kinetic kind of visual elements of something like that, you know, but, you know, it doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just not really, that's not like my personal, what I'm drawn to. And I don't think I am to this style of action necessarily either, especially in Star Wars, but I think she's going to draw me to it instead of me being drawn to it, you know, and I think I'm, I'm excited for it, but it's definitely, it was a unique kind of feeling watching Star Wars presented in that way.
So like a Cowboy Carter experience, if your only familiarity is with, you know, a conventional Beyonce album, and then there's like this country inspired take on Beyonce.
Well, that's an interesting comparison. Yeah. And I definitely don't want to be the person who's saying something like, oh, well, you know, Beyonce shouldn't do country or, you know, whatever, because I listened to Cowboy Carter and I thought it was really cool. And, you know, I thought the idea that, like, what was the Dolly? There was a Dolly Parton song that somebody was saying, like, oh, she shouldn't be singing that song or whatever. And I was like,
Jolene.
Yeah. Why? Why? It was awesome. So, yeah, I don't want to be like, oh, well, I don't know. Star Wars shouldn't be doing, yeah, you know, Kung Fu style action or whatever, because that's not cool. Like, no, I'm into it, but, yeah, it's just different for me.
Yeah. But I mean, I think like that's part of the DNA of Star Wars, is like pulling from other like genres. Like, I think Star Wars at its best is like, you know, a celebration of like film history, where, you know, you have,
yeah,
the like George Lucas pulling from like, you know, like war films and Kurosawa films, and
yeah,
and you know, and then there's like samurai, cowboy, like all kinds of stuff.
And yeah, you're exactly right. And you know what, I think I just like kind of psychoanalyzed myself and figured out, because like I was, you know, trying to work through that publicly on a podcast, you know, with my words, and I wasn't even really making that much sense to myself, you know. I don't know if you could tell or not, but I was like trying to like, why, I don't really get it. And I think I figured it out like around 1999, when The Phantom Menace came out. Another movie came out, The Matrix. And The Matrix feels, you know, in terms of choreography and like a kinetic style and the influences on The Matrix and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly what inspired it, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
In it.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, in the scene and in The Matrix. And, and I don't like that very much at all. And, you know, I think the things that people were drawn to in The Matrix, like bullet time and all that. I know bullet time now is like cliche or whatever, but like, you know, it was so cool at the time to a lot of people. And it was a big part of like, I just feel like that movie is so visually striking and, you know, so stylistic, you know what I mean? The Matrix. And I don't like it. And I think like, I'm watching this and I'm thinking, oh, there's a lot of similarities to that thing I don't like, but I do like this, but something's nagging at me saying like, you don't really like this, but I do like it. But you see what I mean? I think that's like, it's this deep-seated thing from 1999 when people were like, The Phantom Menace sucks because the sky is blue and Jar Jar's a clown. And didn't you see Keanu Reeves in a leather trench coat, and didn't you see bullet time, and didn't you see how the whole thing was green as hell? And I was like, yeah, I saw that. I don't like that very much. And and now it's like, it's staring me, you know what I mean? It's all coming full circle for me. So I just have to work through these emotions, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I like, I don't want to add to that, that conflict for you, or,
you know, yes, you do. Yeah, you do. You do want to, I can tell very much that you want to.
I recently rewatched The Matrix, and I'd say it's about a 100 times better movie than Phantom Menace. It has aged so much better. And that movie slaps. And I
How about the two sequels? How about the two sequels?
Those are not great.
Okay.
The most recent sequel's awesome, though. But yeah, no, I will not defend Reloaded and Revolutions or whatever. I rewatched those too, and I was like, wow, these, I don't like these at all. But,
and I don't even want to, like, I don't want to litigate, like, I'm not even trying to say like The Matrix isn't good. I'm just saying like, I have never liked it, you know what I mean? That's all. Like, yeah. I've never liked it, and so it's just, I think it took me until right now to like process that in some way. Watching this Acolyte scene was kind of reminding me of The Matrix a little bit, just because I think that
a lot of
similarities.
I think like what is similar about both The Matrix and The Phantom Menace is, I think, the audience at large misunderstood both films.
People's
like takeaways from The Matrix were like, yeah, leather jackets and machine guns, like that's what that movie's about. And then when people like look at The Phantom Menace and they're like, oh, it's just about like trade routes and stuff. I think like everyone misunderstood both of those movies at the time, but I think like I actually think The Matrix is like pretty damn close to a perfect movie. Like, it's really good, but neither here nor there. But very excited for The Acolyte is, I think, the big takeaway.
For sure. There's also a new trailer, which I thought was really great. And I think the last time we recorded, we talked about the previous teaser. And I want to say that I was like, hey, I really like it. But also it left me feeling slightly underwhelmed, or like it just didn't, like, it's my most anticipated Star Wars project, but like it wouldn't be just from that teaser. You know, like the teaser didn't really do that much to get me super excited for it. And I feel like this trailer did a lot more in that regard. Like, I feel like it was much more exciting.
Yeah, I think my takeaway from that original teaser is like, man, like there's some hints of like really cool stuff here in like this teaser and the interviews, but I don't know, is Disney gonna like pull in the reins and, you know, keep things like really, really conventional and like not let that auteur spirit out. And then I would say, like, after this scene and the most recent trailer, it's like, no, this is going hard. And, you know, it's being allowed to lean into, you know, this does seem to be like the vision that Leslie Headland and everyone has for this show. Like, it feels like it's fully formed and it's going to be like executed without being like, okay, well, here's a little taste of what things could be, but we're gonna remake A New Hope again. don't worry, we don't want to rock the boat. It's like, no, this is going to rock the boat. Like, there's like no gun shyness to this series. I have like full confidence at this point.
Let's just watch the trailer real quick, Ryan. I'm gonna drop the audio into the podcast here, but I need to watch it just so we can talk about it a little more. I mean, we're not gonna go through it like moment by moment or anything like that, but just so we can talk about it a little more. I need to rewatch it anyway, so if it's okay with you, I'm just gonna put it on again real quick. All right, here we go.
A Jedi was murdered.
The Jedi justify their galactic dominance in the name of peace.
But that peace is a lie.
Jedi are being hunted.
She was my student. I trained her. Let me be the one to bring her in.
I sense this is only a small part of a larger plan. Some sort of shift to tip the scales.
It's time to face the past.
Destiny is not decided for you by an anonymous force. If you want to pull the thread and change everything, then pull it.
What are you?
Okay, pretty sweet. You there, Ryan?
So sick.
Yeah. Really, really cool. I mean, there's like some pretty big. I think we knew that May had been Sol's Padawan in the past. Did we know that? I think we did, right? But I appreciate the way the trailer kind of emphasizes that, like, hey, this is, you know, my former Padawan, so let me be the one to bring her in. And you know, there's text in there about, like, hey, you know, we need to face the past and all that kind of stuff. So I think that seems pretty compelling, pretty interesting, for sure. I love this shot of Jackie Lone, I think is the name of the character, played by the actress from Logan, Daphne. I forget her last name at the moment. I thought you'd know, Ryan. You're supposed to know.
Not off the top of my head, but
okay. Great, well, great she looks really cool. The character seems really interesting. A Padawan here. I love seeing them using like these training like staffs or whatever instead of lightsabers. I think that's really cool. Also, I think that that name is really interesting, Jackie Lon or Jackie Lone. Makes me think of Jedi Geki, you know, which is like a genre term for samurai films, Jedi Geki, which, you know, people theorize is where the term Jedi came from. But Jackie sounds like a combination of those two words. So we'd have to check with Dave, our friend Dave, on that one, but could be a possibility there. Anything else? What else kind of stood out for you in the trailer, Ryan?
I love just the no one is safe from the truth. Is just a really, really cool thing. I think the line about like if you want to like pull the string and unravel everything,
yeah,
then just pull it,
yeah,
like is like super. I think like those two things combined, and then like, you know, from the previous teaser, like the conversations around like this is about, you know, power and
who's allowed to use it. Yeah.
And who's allowed to use it. Like, I think all of that is just really compelling to me. And knowing that this is, you know, a big part of the plot is like unraveling a conspiracy, but it sounds like the conspiracy is, you know, within, which is just really, really compelling stuff to me. And and then we finally get to see the Sith-esque person at the end. A little bit of Kylo Ren, Knights of Ren type vibes here in the helmet. Kind of teethy,
looks like teeth, yeah. Looks, I don't like think they teeth? Are teeth, but like, yeah, the helmet's designed to look like a
it. Unfortunately, the first thing I thought of was the gimp mask in Pulp Fiction, which I don't know if that was
probably not the intention, but I guess you never know.
I don't know, that's just where my brain went. But it is like, I don't know, like I feel like we've maybe gotten a little bit too much of Sith-esque people in the last few years. I think, you know, the Knights of Ren were pushing it a bit, and then I think just a decade of Inquisitors has kind of, like, to me, has kind of like slowly diluted like the impact of seeing someone show up with a red lightsaber. You know, because you think back to just like seeing Darth Maul for the first time and like how wild that was to like see like, whoa, this is not the Emperor or Vader. Like this is someone else, like with a red lightsaber. Like
yeah.
This is wild. And now, you know, we've kind of gotten a lot of Sith in Earth.
Yeah, but you know
mask.
The yeah, I'm with you there. Although I gotta say, I think I'm hoping that the mask is necessitated by a reveal, you know, in other words, that this mm-hmm. character is going to turn out to be someone that they know or someone that they have some experience with or something like that, you know, so that the mask is necessary to hide the identity of that character. Yeah. I hope it's that more so than just like a cool helmet, you know, because that was the case with Kylo Ren, sort of. I mean, it was, but you know, like pretty early into The Force Awakens, maybe a third or I think less than half of the way through,
yeah.
You know, Snoke is like, oh, you're the son of Han Solo. And, you know, he takes the helmet off when he's talking to Rey. And it's not really like a big, you know, a big reveal or anything. You know, nobody's shocked really to find out that Kylo Ren is connected, you know. So anyway, this character being helmeted and then, you know, having a big reveal, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah. But you also don't want to do exactly the Kylo Ren thing as well. Like,
what do you mean?
I think like it worked in Force Awakens and,
oh.
You know, that was like, it was all the helmet. Everything was like important to Kylo Ren, Ben Solo's
yeah.
character.
Well, but, like, yeah,
you can't do that exactly. Here.
No, I don't want him to. I think this is going to be a mystery. That's what I'm saying. Like, there wasn't really any mystery about Kylo Ren is the point
I
was making.
Gotcha.
There wasn't much mystery, but I think in this case, the show is being set up like a mystery. And I've even seen Leslie Headland saying like, or maybe I heard somebody else say this about Russian Doll. I don't know. But anyway, that like, no, she said it. I think that she, when she was writing Russian Doll or maybe about this show, she doesn't want the episodes to be like, it's not like one big long movie where you just randomly choose a point to cut off one episode and start another. Like, she wants every episode to leave you like wanting to know what's going to happen next and feeling like you have to see the next yeah. episode right away and all that kind of stuff. And so, and it, we know there's going to be a mystery about, you know, who's doing what and why and all that kind of stuff. So, mm-hmm. If this character is helmeted and by the end, it's an emotional or meaningful reveal of who that is, then I think we could say, well, yeah, they've done a lot of helmets, they've done a lot of characters that look like this, but here yeah. it's not to make a cool design. It's, you know, I mean, not only that, it is, you know, there's a meaningful story purpose for that look. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, trailer is amazing. Can't wait for the show. Super, super excited. Yeah, it's going to be the best.
Less than a month.
Yeah. Wild. Yep. Yep. Yeah. And I'll officially be on summer break when it debuts. So I'm pretty hyped for that too.
Oh my God. It's so far from my summer break. Depressing.
The fact that you even get one as an administrator is pretty good though.
Yeah. 3 weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I will take
yeah.
it versus the
yeah.
alternative of nothing. Anyways, real quick, we won't spend a lot of time on this because we both haven't watched the same amount of it. Tales of the Empire is
yeah.
a thing that was released.
Tales of the Empire was new content. Yep, new content released on Star Wars Day in the style of Tales of the Jedi. Exactly in the style of Tales of the Jedi, only featuring two, three episode stories about Imperial characters. So yes, I did watch. I watched the first three episodes about
stuff.
Yeah, Morgan Elsbeth. Yes, I have not watched the other three about Barriss Offee, which is funny because when these were announced, I was like, well, I'm pretty stoked for the Barriss Offee stuff, but the Morgan Elsbeth, I'm sure will be good, but you know, I'm less excited for that, but No, I planned to watch it all before we recorded. It's just, it was a crazy, crazy busy weekend. And it's not the kind of thing, like, when I need to catch up on watching wrestling, you know, I, like, will have it on while I'm doing a bunch of other stuff because, like, things I have to get done, you know what I mean? But I can't watch, like, an episode of a Star Wars show, like, while I'm doing the dishes. I got to, like, just sit there and really watch it, you know? Yes. So finding the time has been tough. But I will watch the other three ASAP. I'm excited to do it, but might have to be tomorrow or the weekend. So anyway,
I think you should wait to watch them in the last three in like a proper proper Star Wars setting.
All right, cool, cool. That's what I will say. Yeah, but how did you feel about the show, Ryan? I mean, what did you?
It's maybe my favorite Star Wars animated thing ever.
Wow.
I think especially the last three episodes in particular.
Okay, the ones I haven't seen. Okay, gotcha.
Yes. So, all right. And I don't want to overhype it or anything, because like, it's still within the range of Star Wars animation. It's not really breaking new ground, but for me, I think maybe because I was, you know, I was going into it with the expectations of having watched Tales of the Jedi, which I think is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I watched it. It was fine. Like, it was good. And then, you know, I would say, like, the Morgan Elsbeth stuff, those episodes, I think were very good. I think there is always that question of, like, you know, do we need to explore every character's backstory? Like, there's always that question of, like, is it necessary, for this kind of, like, bit character in Ahsoka, who's just kind of, like, a pretty significant part of the story, but it's, like, okay, like, is this the most, is it necessary? Like, will this, like, change the way that you watch Ahsoka or anything? And I don't think it does, and I don't think it's something that you need to watch Ahsoka for, or vice versa. But I do think it is like a pretty good story of, you know, just interpersonal struggle and, you know, power challenges and corruption and, all of that. It's like, it's a very good Empire story, which we don't get as many of, I feel. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's not a character that I was super connected to or cared a whole lot about. And I would say that's still true. But I think it was a good story, as you said. And I think also, well, it's gorgeous, you know, beautiful animation for sure. Also, I think that it does a good job of just kind of helping build the Empire as a character, I guess, or at least, like, gives us a better understanding of the oppression of the Empire at that time early on and how they used people. And, you know, I thought it was, like, the fact that they were gonna, you know, string her along, look at her ideas, and then, you know, just to be like, cool, we want that, but we're just gonna come take it. And, you know, we're just gonna, like, you just basically did an advertising campaign for us to come oppress your system. You know what I mean? Like, that was pretty, it was pretty interesting. So, I really liked it.
Yeah. And I think, like, the stuff with her, you know, her, like, being shocked that people hated her as, like, a magistrate, and her being like, your lives would be so much worse if it wasn't for me. Like, I saved you. Like, that whole thing, I think, is, like, really interesting. Just in, like, you know, like, political context of, like, I think that is, like, a very common sentiment from, like politicians, from, you know, corporate executives, like, who are, yep. like, doing yep. shady stuff, and then they're like, how can people possibly not like me? Right. Like, because, like, I don't know, like, it seemed like she really felt like she was, you know, doing amazing things for people.
Yeah.
And that her methods were just, but, yeah. So I thought, like, that stuff was cool. But
cool.
I would say the highlight is the next three episodes.
Okay. Well, I just want to put out there real quickly, we're not going to like talk about it because you haven't watched it, and we're, you know, wrapping up the show here. At some point, I would love to do an episode or I don't know, about Bad Batch Season 3, because I really loved Bad Batch Season 3, and the finale was on May 1st, so just a couple days before Star Wars Day, and I thought it was such a great finale. Now, take that with a grain of salt, Ryan, because I said the same thing about the Star Wars. God, what was the show with... I love the show, too. Not Rebellion. It wasn't called Rebellion. What was the name of that show? With
Resistance.
Resistance, yes. Resistance. Star Wars Resistance.
Yeah, you did like that.
I loved the finale for that, too. I mean, this is different because it's... obviously, it's not skewing towards a young audience like that show was. This is more in the style, or very much in the style of Clone Wars and Tales of the Jedi and Empire and all that kind of stuff, right? Actually, when I was looking at the credits of the Tales of the Empire episodes, I was like, oh yeah, like all those names are the same names as, you know, as far as director and writer and all that kind of stuff as the Bad Batch. So, but I thought the finale was really, really, really great. It was exciting. It was satisfying. It was emotional. And, it was really great. I was left feeling, very, very pleased with the Bad Batch. I thought every season, you know, was better than the last, and I thought season three in particular was very, very strong and built towards a really great finale. And it was a pretty solid finale too, in terms of I think, and you know, I hope honestly, the kind of clone centric storytelling, at least in animation. Like, we had lots of clone stories in the Clone Wars, and then we had lots of clone stories in Rebels and, you know, multiple seasons of the Bad Batch. And just like timeline wise, where we are and the way it wraps up here, it really does kind of feel like, all right, you know, Clone Wars ended and then they brought it back for a season. And then they were like, just kidding, we're going to do a whole nother show that's also still about clones and like an extension of Clone Wars, whatever. But like, it really does feel like now we have reached a pretty logical conclusion for, you know, what, how stories about these clones would be explored in a animated show anyway. And, I think it was a very fitting conclusion to that. But it was, I'll wrap up quickly here, but, Bad Batch Season 3, I think the show definitely turned in a more personal direction as it went on. So, you know, it opens up, you know, as this like A-team knockoff with these clones that all fit these goofy archetypes. And, you know, it quickly became a story about family, as many Star Wars stories do, you know, when, Omega was, introduced to the group and, you know, they became, you know, father figures for her and all that kind of stuff. But like, it was still this big, like, I don't know, high concept kind of thing about this team of, you know, Ninja Turtle, Ghostbuster cartoon characters, where everybody was their own, you know, Donatello does machines and Leonardo leads. And, you know, that was like what it felt like in the beginning. But I feel like as the show went on, it did, you know, really kind of turn into this more kind of, smaller stakes, like kind of personal story. And it is about like the clones and like resolving the clone story, but it's also very much just about like this little group of clones. And, yeah, I think it was an epic and exciting and like high stakes finale, but at the same time, it didn't necessarily have the same level of like galactic consequence that, you know, a lot of Star Wars things would as they get towards the end like that. You know what I mean? And I kind of like that because it really was, I don't know, it was just a beautiful story for these group of characters, and what they accomplished was really great. But also, it did feel sort of like it just happened in their little corner of the galaxy, and you know, the Emperor didn't show up in the end, and you know what I mean? It was like, I don't know, like sometimes like in the Star Wars games, like you've been playing a whole game with no Darth Vader, but then all of a sudden for some reason he's the final boss, you know? It didn't do that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it didn't do that kind of thing at all. It was
that's nice, but
it was really great. It was really, really great. Cool. So I was just really happy with the finale. So tossing that out there, pour one out for the Bad Batch, gone too soon. You know, but it was good.
Gone at an appropriate time.
Yeah, maybe it was good that you know, they were able to have a final season and know it was the final season, and you know,
yeah,
I don't actually think there should have been a fourth season of the Bad Batch, but yeah, it was all very nice.
Yeah, and I'm glad for Bad Batch fans that that you got that, because like honestly, like, you know, it's not my thing. I tried, not my thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, obviously, it, like, people like it, but it also really felt like it was a very small amount of people who liked it and who were watching it, I should say. I think, like, the majority of people who, like, committed to it and were, like, looking forward to it, like, saw it through. But yeah, it did feel like, wow, there's, like, a weekly Star Wars show that zero humans are talking about outside of our Star Wars Discord, like, and people with Star Wars podcasts. Like,
yeah, no, that's true. Like no, when Rebels was on
about this show,
like, when Rebels was on, you could buy Rebels t-shirts at Target, and there was a Rebels toy line, and you know, like, yeah, it was a thing that felt much more consequential in terms of the impact on fans than Bad Batch ever did. I definitely agree with that. Which is, you know, Caleb and I were talking about this on the way back from the Phantom Menace the other night. It is an interesting question, because I feel like to produce an animated show for Disney Plus has to be a fraction of the financial investment that producing The Acolyte or Andor or something is. So it's like, well, I hope there's another Star Wars animated show on the way, because I want to watch it. But also, it just seems logical. But then, you know, the other side of that coin is like, well, how big of a splash did The Bad Batch make? Like, how much of an impact did the show have? So, I don't know. But again, like, even if it's only a small, like, the most vocal or the most, like, you know, hardcore Star Wars fans that want to watch a Star Wars animated show, like, it's still, I would think, you know, worth investing in for a service like Disney Plus. So hopefully Lucasfilm Animation has things in the works right now, and not just specials. And you know, maybe they're gonna do movies. I don't know. I hope they're gonna do another show, but we'll see.
I mean, yeah, because like I also like, this wasn't, that isn't just me like dunking on The Bad Batch. Like, no one watches the show. It's also the same thing with Star Wars Visions. Like, it's like, man, this is so good. Why are people just complaining about stuff they hate about the live action shows and not like checking this out? Like, please.
Yeah.
Like, if you think like Ahsoka's boring and tropey and stuff, like, watch Star Wars Visions. Like, it's the exact opposite of that. Like, give it a shot. And then I think like also, just, you know, over the weekend, I was just like posting into the abyss on Blue Sky about like how much I liked Tales of the Empire, and like no one watched it. It's a bummer, like, because it's really good Star Wars.
And
like, I don't know, like, I don't know what the range of these animated shows are at this point. Like, I don't really know who is watching them outside of like hardcore Star Wars fans, and maybe that's enough. Maybe it is like the, you know, the people who buy Spider-Man comics, like, it's a tiny fraction of people who watch Marvel stuff, and it's like this is like a tiny fraction of the people who you know, watch Star Wars movies and the live action shows. but like it's enough to like keep it so that they can like keep making Spider-Man comics. Like, I don't know.
Well, and if kids, I don't know if kids watch this stuff, hopefully they do, but if kids are watching it, you know, like there's a reason to invest there too, because they ideally would grow up to watch your Star Wars TV shows and movies and stuff, you know, but I mean, they could probably watch those as kids anyways.
Unfortunately,
but
I think most kids think of Star Wars as Fortnite skins at this point.
Yeah. Like, Elliot was pretty into seeing The Phantom Menace. He was pretty excited about it when we left, like, because Owen was trash talking it, and Elliot was like, "What are you talking about? That lightsaber sequence was so cool!" And like, he was pretty excited about it. So
your kids are I know. Not good case studies for this.
Yeah, you're right, because I dragged him to see the movie in the first place,
Star Wars pilling them since birth.
I know. Yeah, sometimes it backfires though. But yes, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just don't think kids have an awareness of a lot of Star Wars stuff outside of like Grogu and Fortnite stuff.
Well, Grogu did some heavy lifting there, right? But I mean, how much do kids watch cartoons now? You know, how much do kids watch any like weekly cartoon show now in comparison to when we were growing up? You know what I mean? I don't know.
They just watch Mr. Beast TikToks.
Yep. Oh my God, YouTube shorts. Why would I need a television program, a scripted television program? I could just watch YouTube shorts all day. You know what I mean?
Kids these days.
Kids, wow. All right, we should wrap the show up here. We've descended into kids these days rhetoric, so it's time to bring it home. Hopefully the show comes together. We've had some technical difficulties. But hopefully it comes together, and we will be back pretty soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast. I'm sure we'll do at least one more show before the Acolyte debuts, and then I'm excited to be doing some weekly shows, Ryan, discussing each episode of the Acolyte for sure. So that should be fun and is right around the corner. So we will be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast. Until then, you can reach out to the show, email us, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Blue Sky, Blockade Runner or Blockade Runner Podcast or something on Blue Sky. Blue Sky, there's not that many people on Blue Sky yet. It's not that hard to find us, but it is open to everybody, and you should join it and follow the Blockade Runner Podcast on Blue Sky. You could also follow Ryan on Blue Sky.
Via Malay is my personal account. I also have an account, DVD Menus, and Standard Issue Gaming.
Yeah. And we have a Discord too. You could join our Discord where we are talking about Star Wars and Star Wars collectibles and Star Wars video games and Celebration Japan and all kinds of stuff in the Discord, which is a small but excellent crew of fans, and we'd love to have you join in on the conversation over there. So thank you very much for listening, and until next time, what do I say until next time? Actually, I think thank you very much for listening, and until next time.
Until next time.
Yeah. All right.